Jerry Kay's Almost Daily Rants and Raves.
The Week.
The Women in AV Wavecast.
Green AV.
Hello again, listeners, and welcome back to The Week on Rave Radio. I'm Joel Rollins. This week we have a lot of news about industry happenings and new products. And then this week's guest is Chris Gillespie, Technical Applications Manager at Prism and a longtime friend and colleague. Chris and I have both spent much of our careers as trainers, and Chris was my co-author and co-presenter of Infocom's former rental school. He's in Beijing right now, but agreed to join me for a conversation about training and especially the differences between training stagers and training installers. It should be an interesting conversation, so stay tuned. In the meantime, let me remind you that The Week is brought to you by Mitsubishi Electric, who make a wide variety of products for our industry, including the all-new cloud projector. You can find out more about that and about Mitsubishi's other products at www.mitsubishielectric.com. Also on Rave Radio, take a listen to our other podcasts like the Green AV Podcast, the Wavecast from Women in AV, and Gary Kay's Almost Daily Rants and Raves. You can find them all at www.ravepubs.com and on iTunes. Here on The Week, we try to address the most important items we see in AV news for the week, and we bring you a range of guests for a conversation about subjects important to our industry. In the news this week, well, I just read the AP story about the departure and arrival monitor that fell on a family of five at the Birmingham Shuttlesworth Airport in Birmingham, Alabama on Friday. It was a six-screen, 3x2 array flat panel enclosure that apparently held 40-inch LCD monitors that were mounted inside a wooden housing. Pretty typical of what you see at most airports. However, it wasn't attached to anything, it was freestanding. The entire enclosure fell on the family, killing the 10-year-old boy, seriously injuring the mother, who's still in the hospital, and injuring other kids. This is a tragedy, and it should and it will be investigated. And in addition to monitoring the condition of the mother, we also need to be watching this story for who will get the blame. It's the airport's responsibility to make sure the digital signage is safe. It's the integrator's responsibility to make sure it meets code for the structure, whether or not they designed the system. Or is it the state's responsibility to monitor these types of installs, much like they monitor the safety of elevators? I'm not sure where this will end up, and I'm certainly no expert on Alabama law, but we will all be better watching this and take note, as the safety of giant electrical digital signs will soon be monitored, and the responsibility of one of these groups. And as I'm sure you're going to call operations to make sure you are insured properly, I'd think learning the codes and safety regulations to keep everyone safe once these things have been installed is the most important issue at hand. Next week, another of Rave contributors, Scott Tyner, will join me for a discussion of job safety. Scott wrote an excellent article about safety in this week's Rave Pro AV edition, and I'm looking forward to sharing more of his thoughts on the subject with you. In the meantime, the thoughts and prayers of the entire Rave team go out to the Brissett family and to all the others involved in the tragedy. In other news, annual global LCD shipments declined for the first time ever in 2012, down 1% to 203 million, according to the latest findings published in the NPD Display Search Quarterly Advanced Global TV Shipment and Forecast Report. Quarter four was the only quarter to see any growth, rising 0.6%, but it wasn't enough to offset declines from the first three quarters. The preliminary outlook for LCD TV growth in 2013 is cautious, despite significant reductions in demand for plasma and CRT TV and the global economic conditions that continue to be challenging. And now, from the world of management. In a perfect world, you'd run your business with a 100% just-in-time inventory system, where you order only what customers have purchased and only when you need it. But unfortunately, it's not realistic. Through project change orders, swap-outs and exchanges, repairs, manufacturer purchase incentives, and other unforeseen circumstances, you end up with unwanted inventory sitting on shelves doing nothing but collecting dust and tying up your cash. Invenshare.com, developed by systems integrators for systems integrators, is a new private online marketplace that connects dealers' inventory in the cloud. You can easily and quickly add your excess and unwanted inventory. When you need something, instantly search by manufacturer or model number. When you find what you need, you can purchase it, make an offer, or even offer to trade for the product you need. It's all built into the Invenshare.com system. Integrators can get more information and view videos on how it works at www.invenshare.com. In another new product announcement, Extron's Teamwork is basically a prepackaged, pre-configured small room system that supports groups of 4 to 6 users. Teamwork 400 and Teamwork 600 digital collaboration system packages are pre-configured for ease of installation with virtually any furniture system, new or currently in use. The Teamwork system also works with most flat panel displays, laptops, and tablets. For added flexibility, Teamwork is scalable and can easily be tailored to meet specific requirements with the addition of mounting hardware, support for legacy analog sources, and other optional accessories. It's designed for simple, intuitive operation with a minimum of training. Users simply connect their laptop or tablet to a Teamwork Show Me cable to start the system, then press the Share button to display their content on the presentation display. When done, users simply disconnect and walk away, and the Teamwork system automatically turns itself off and is ready for the next collaboration session. The Teamwork system is HDCP compliant and supports full resolution, full frame digital video up to 1080p60 and analog computer video up to 1920x1200. Each Teamwork system package is complete and ready for installation and includes HDMI Show Me cables, a switcher, a system controller, a cable cubby enclosure with 4 AC outlets, and other necessary system cables. Teamwork supports legacy analog computer sources with the optional Teamwork VGA kit. Mounting hardware is optionally available to facilitate different collaboration table or work surface designs. Another great new one, Screen Innovation says that its Black Diamond ambient light rejection screen technology is what makes their screen unique. Utilizing one motor, 4 custom helixes, and a spool of slender aircraft cable, Black Diamond Motorized lowers a thin wing containing the Black Diamond screen downwards from a recessed ceiling-mounted cassette. The cable-hung wiring then stops, and from it, a small tube quickly emerges and lowers itself down to an adjustable predetermined image height, leaving only the image space in sight. Because Black Diamond screens do not require masking or any black drop material, there's no visible material above, below, or on either side of the screen surface, allowing the images projected on Black Diamond Motorized to appear as though they are suspended in air. In other news, Vizix has launched a brand new website for its newest digital signage content management application, Appoint. The site is optimized for audiences seeking affordable digital signage solutions for K-12 schools, small businesses, local franchises, clinics, etc. The new website features product information, technical specs, and pricing with direct links for online buying. Each of 3 products can be downloaded directly from the website for a free 60-day trial period and can be purchased and licensed for use through the site's online portal. That's it for news from the world of AV. We'll be updating constantly on www.ravepubs.com throughout the week. In the meantime, now on to our guest segment for the week. Well, folks, as I mentioned at the top of the show, with me this evening is Chris Gillespie with Prism. Chris is live with us from Beijing tonight, giving up an exciting evening in Beijing to be with us. So thanks, Chris.
You're welcome. All for you, Joel.
Thank you so much. All for me and the audience, who I'm sure now will include a whole bunch of people in China. Chris and I have done a lot of training together. We've done a lot of work together, too. We've worked together at ADCOM and Extron. And during all of that time, we moved from training our own people at ADCOM to working together at Extron School. Chris was also the co-author and co-teacher of Infocom's rental school with me. So we've spent a lot of time in front of various kinds of technicians together teaching. And the subject of today's show was really the difference between stagers and training installation techs. And I knew that Chris would have a lot of opinions on that, so I'm very grateful to him for joining us from his evening in Beijing tonight. Chris, I'm thinking back to times when you and I taught mixed Infocom classes together and the people that were in them. And one of the things that I've struggled over 25 years in this industry in doing is to train people to do both. I mean, when I was at Audiovisual Systems, when I was first at ADCOM, we had a mixed group of people that did both installations and rentals, and the difficulties of doing that. And I've come to the conclusion that I don't know that they are the same people, even if they have the same skill set. How do you feel about that?
You know, it's a mentality when you walk into things. You know, if you, in one job's description, You go into something and you're wiring the system, or you're putting in the mounts, or whatever it may be. You go in with a fixed set of things that you're going to get done. And so when you're training, you're wanting to know as much as, or the individuals, I should say, are wanting to know as much as they can about that one sort of narrow focus or narrow scope. Whereas when someone's approaching this as more of a staging technician, and that's even different in some cases than the standard rental technician, is that they're going in with a mentality of looking at the whole thing. You're looking at the entire project. You know, you're not just focused on one narrow aspect of it, because, you've got to integrate all these different things together. You're unloading the truck, you're laying cables, you're wiring up the speakers, you're wiring up the video land. So it's very much of a cross-training thing, and it's very much of an attitude in looking at a variety of different areas and making sure that they all come together.
Yeah, I agree. And the other thing to me is one of, there's something that I come back to all the time, and I don't know who it was that said it, but it was back when I was at ADCOM, that somebody said the difference between an installation technician and a staging technician is the installation technician gets it done right, and the staging technician gets it done right now. And I think a lot of it is just that whole, there is no tomorrow because the show is at 5. So
yeah, exactly. It's there's that time pressure. There's also the fact that because there's also a different level of, I don't want to use the term professionalism, because it's everyone's professional in their different ways, but there's a different level of fit and finish that need to be attained as well, because when a technician is wiring a rack for a permanent installation, obviously it's got to be so neat and tidy that you can eat on it, that some guy can come back 3 years later and do service on the rack, et cetera. When, you look at some of the jobs that we've done in the past, I'll draw out the cables that we had for, or the wiring when we did Microsoft Global Summit years ago. And, you couldn't get within about 3 feet of the rack because the cables were just all over the place. And if you stepped in the wrong place, you were going to disconnect four things. But that's sort of the way it had to be, because, that ability to finally dress the racks and everything just wasn't a luxury that you had. But the system for everything it needed to do did what it did, and in many ways was ahead of what a lot of people were able to do in a lot of permanent installs at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's one of the things that's our install crew now will not allow me to solder.
Well, that's probably a good idea.
Yeah, I guess so. But it's a matter of, I take great pride in, I solder faster than anybody I know. And our lead installer, Jason Welter, will look at me and goes, yes, but you don't solder well. And I think a lot of that is the difference. In rentals, it was, oh my God. The only reason we ever had a soldering iron out was that we needed to save a show. And, suddenly, link two things.
Well, sometimes we didn't even have that. I was doing something in Vancouver many, many years ago and didn't have the right cable with the right connector, and I was trying to connect up to, oh God, back in the old days, back in the dark ages of a Sony 1040 and the VPH 1022 controller. I cannot even believe I just came up with those numbers. It needed a BNC connector. I only had an RCA, so out came the butter knife and stripped back the wires and jammed the center conductor in and taped the shield to the outer portion of the BNC connector, and hey, it worked. So yeah, things that you couldn't do in many ways. I remember setting up a show again in Vancouver one time, and I had a lighting dimmer pack, and the house, I said to the house, I need the electrician to come by because I gotta need him to hook up the electrical pack. And so the house electrician came by, and I said, yeah, can you hook up my dimmer pack, please? And he looked at me and he said, okay, just one thing. What do all the colors mean on the wires? And I just looked at him and said, it means I'm hooking it up. Get out of my way.
Absolutely. Yeah. I have actually, for those of you in the listening group who will remember these, I actually have a photograph of Chris and I teaching a multi-camera class together in Vancouver. And we're standing among three M3s on tripods, tube cameras. And now I will bear in mind that Chris and I were both very, very young when we were doing that. But that's how far back this goes.
Yeah, it's
how many of the companies that you work with today? I mean, I know that you get around with Prism especially. How many of the companies that you work with do both rental and staging? One of the things that I'm seeing in the industry is that over the last 20 years, those things have really separated.
Yeah, I've seen the same thing. You know, some of the larger companies do both, but a lot of times it's just because they've got the customers that want to do it that way. So it's sort of a it either is in some ways potentially a lost leader, or it's just, you know, the customer wants to do it, so they don't necessarily put a large amount of effort into the other side. It's just there if they need it and they get enough business to maintain it. So you definitely see stuff like that going on. But I think also that, you know, it's just one of those things where you cannot focus completely. I remember a friend of mine a few years ago went to an install company where they wanted to open up a rental company, I'm sorry, that wanted to open up an install arm. And, you know, it just didn't work out. After about 9 months, they basically, you know, rolled out or closed up a shop on the install side, because the guys who were the rental management didn't have the appetite for the longer lead times, the longer time to see the cash come back in. You know, they were sort of used to that more instant gratification, if you will, of the staging and rental world, where, you know, you book it, you ship it, you set it up, you tear it down, you get paid. And that's just not, or theoretically you get paid, and that's just not the reality in the install world. Because, you know, you get these projects that you're working on, that, you know, we've got ones that, you know, have been, you know, in process for 6 months, a year, you know, and there's big projects I know out there that, you know, it's 2 years, it's 3 years sometimes for some of these really large projects when they come in. And, you know, and again, you're putting out a tremendous amount of energy into design and quoting and all of that stuff before you even hear if you're on the short list for the bid. So it's a very different appetite.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, one of the things that I complain about all the time with our installation people is that it's never over. I mean, I can remember back to some of the larger shows that we worked on together, things like Comdex and Microsoft Global Summit, and they're intense for a week or so, right? I mean, they are literally your 20-hour days and you're living on coffee. But at the end, you know, the curtain comes down and they're over, and you know, yeah, that you pack it up, you go home. You're always astonished at how quickly it packs up compared to how long it took to move in. But at some point, then you can call that done. And whether you've achieved everything you wanted to, or even if you're out crying in your beer, you're done. Installations are never ever.
Well, if you'll indulge me for a second, you've hit upon a sore spot, because at one point in my career here a few years back, I spent 3.5 years on the dark side as an end user. And when I became an end user, I thought it was going to be this totally just, you know, easy gig, because I knew lots about AV and this was going to be a total swan job. And I realized very quickly when I got there that, you know, I didn't know crap about customers. And I think as an industry, the AV industry as a whole, and I still see it all the time, we're not well suited to understanding the customer as well as we think we might. And, you know, it's everything from control system design to truly understanding what the customer's needs are. You know, it's the old adage of, you know, could you bring in your wife and operate this system that was just put together? And more importantly, would it suit the needs that she has of the system as opposed to what we think the customer has? And what I think is a big part of this never-ending job, I'll avoid the temptation to sing the never-ending story there, but the never-ending job is a victim, or it's an effect of the industry as a whole not totally embracing and not doing nearly as good a job as they can on comprehensive scope of work with jobs. You know, with a staging job, you sit down with the customer, you identify their needs, and it's all very scripted and very structured. And so it's very easy to get a clean picture of what they want. They want a big flipping screen. They want lots of sound. They want it to sound like the voice of God coming down, or voice of supreme deity, if you've got a very, very conservative client who freaks out when you say voice of God. And so you do the job, and you meet their needs very easily. Whereas, you know, as you know, you're doing a system for a customer, and let's say you're doing, you know, 7 conference rooms, a multipurpose room, and then the CEO's boardroom. You know, the needs of all of those are very different. The audience and the expectations of the people going into it are very different, very difficult. to nail down. And unless you've got an extremely comprehensive scope of work, it's very difficult for the job to be over because there's nothing stating what over means. And so it's very difficult to get to that end game because you never defined what the end game was. And I remember I did a project where we did a remodel of the CEO's boardroom, and I drove the I was the integrator's worst nightmare, and I drove them nuts with scope of work, scope of work, scope of work. You know, and in the end, they were very thankful because it meant that there was actually a very clearly delineated end game, and we were able to break free of that. But it's, you know, that's one of the areas where the industry as a whole, you know, I've seen real weakness, and it's very difficult. And you get into scope creep and everything else that makes for very long and painful days, especially for the accounting people trying to get paid.
Well, I totally agree with you there. I mean, I'm a writer, so one of the things that I've really done over the last 10 years is a scope statement and a statement of work to be done for one of our installations can run 20, 30 pages. And it is, you know, if a function gets added or taken away, it's very carefully delineated. But not only that, we actually write pages of this is what the user experience will be like, so that we try to look at it from their side, and then we try to document it, and then have them read it and say, yes, that is exactly what I would expect to have happen. We go through several different meeting scenarios to talk about, and then you would do this and that, and then this would happen. And try to look at it not from the technical side, but from their side, from what it would be like to be standing at the control panel. And even then, we don't do that well enough. I can't agree with you more that's something that our industry needs to learn at a much deeper level than we do now, and that we probably need to get them more involved in than we do. The difference being that if you were going to write a scope of work for a rental, you probably don't have time to do the writing that it would take to do that on the rental side. But even if you define the scope for an install really well, I find that even if you've done that successfully, even if a client comes back and says that exactly met everything because of all the upfront work that we did, then it's time for the next upgrade. You know, so even then, the installation doesn't go away. There is a constant, okay, well, now we got to add this, now we got to do that. And there's never that real moment that there isn't a rental, which is we're done till next year, or whatever. So I think that's part of what gives a rental tech satisfaction versus what gives an installer satisfaction. Installers, you know, the guys that I have that are good at this, love being back. And one of the things that they take great pride in is that we built the system well enough that as people were putting in upgrades, we were ready to put them in, as opposed to, oh God, now we've got to redo the whole thing. You know, we try to stay very modular. Rentals are to achieve something very specific in a very short period of time. What would you say is the number one quality that you would want in a rental technician? Is somebody entering the industry now, what are you looking for? They don't know anything.
You know, it's the same. It's the same thing I'm looking for somebody in any profession or in any job description is, you know, the right attitude. You know, I really don't care how much training someone's got or how much experience they've got specifically related to the field. I care about their attitude because you can train everything else. You know, some of the best people that I've worked with over the years, you know, came in and had no background in that field, but they had the right attitude, and you could tell that they were going to go places, and they were going to get stuff accomplished. You know, I remember, you know, when you talk about, you know, what makes a technician and what really makes a staging person, it's that attitude. I remember an example doing the Bank of Montreal's annual meeting in Calgary years ago, and you know, working with Frank and Frank Mullaney, who we worked with, and as far as I'm concerned, he was a really great guy that, you know, had a really, really got what we had to do, which was, you know, basically in staging, it's you've got to satisfy the customer's needs. That's what it is. And a lot of times it's very definable with, you know, projectors and sound and things like that. But it's also taking care of all those other needs. And I remember this one time we had to get a photocopier for the customer, which, of course, has everything to do with AV. And, you know, we got a complaint from them that the photocopier wasn't right. It didn't meet their needs. And I brought it up to one of the local guys and said, okay, we can just go talk to them, find out what they need. And all he could say was, we don't do photocopiers. And it was like, oh, God, never mind. And, you know, I went and spent 15 minutes talking to the customer, figuring out how many pages per minute and collating and stapling and everything else, and got the right copier. Because it's that attitude of, we've got to get this done. And it really doesn't matter if it's specifically under my job description, because my job description is make the customer happy.
Absolutely. There's, you know, and that's one of the places where staging kind of extends outward from AV into whatever it takes to make the show happen, you know, whether it's side equipment or stage equipment or what. And that's one of the places where I wrote an article a while back, kind of bemoaning the demise of the PA in that role. I've had a couple of phenomenal assistants, and my test for them was always to be standing on a ladder, be able to turn and yell at them, I need 3 albino elephants and a trampoline, and have them just turn and go find those things, as opposed
to... What color is the trampoline?
Right. How large? Do the elephants go on the trampoline?
Like a concierge person at the Four Seasons.
Right. And on the other hand, in installs... you have a very legitimate, that's the area of another specialist, in which case what I would expect one of my install people to do would be to find someone to refer them to, as opposed to handling it themselves.
That's a good project manager. You know, I remember when I was working for VeriSign, you know, we would, you know, have all these projects going on, and I, up till that point in my life, I'd sort of thought that, you know, project managers were, you know, quasi-technical experts, because in the AV industry, there's very much this whole thing of, well, he's a good installer, so let's make him a project manager. And it's different skill sets. And, you know, we would have project managers. I remember this one I was working with her, and, you know, she was simultaneously managing a $100 million data center that we were building out in Delaware, and everything that was involved in building a data center, from critical facilities to security to networking to telco to, you know, the triple layer of battery backups and everything else, you know, and she was doing a changeover from some internal systems as well, you know, and it's like realizing that they don't necessarily have to know the stuff, they just have to be, you know, the way I put it is, a project manager is actually just a professional pain in the ass who's really organized. And, you know, you get to that level where, you know, that's what you need of people. You need them to be able to keep all the balls in the air and figure out who needs to handle which balls.
Absolutely. You know, and I think that that's one of the different, you know, the scope of work statement for a staging show is whatever has to happen, you know.
Yeah.
And to be able to roll with it. If I think of the number one quality I look for in bringing in somebody new to a staging group, somebody that's never been, it's adaptability. It's the idea that you need to be able to arrive on show site and discover that your job is going to be entirely different than you thought it was going to be when you left headquarters. And you know, and also be able to step into a role where you see a gap and roll with it. Where the definition for me of somebody who is going to be an installer is somebody who is detail-oriented, devoted to that scope of work statement, devoted to getting that right, and in terms of anything that steps outside it, being able to work with the customer to say, okay, that's not what we do, but let me help you find someone who does.
Yeah.
You know, where the stager will be, okay, I'll handle that. That goes at the bottom of my list of 73 things that I'm handling. So that whole, you know, multitasking on the fly thing to me is kind of the key attitude of the stager. Now, that doesn't mean... Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I just remembered a time when we were loading in a show in Winnipeg. This was a Sunday in Winnipeg in the middle of winter, and the very first thing that happened was the union guy, in pulling the car turntable off of the tractor trailer, he was a pretty lousy forklift driver, and he basically just got the forks under it, lifted, angled the turntable and dragged it out, and proceeded to rip the cap off the motor, and so the brushes went flying everywhere, and of course, you know, we couldn't find all the parts, and driving around Winnipeg on a Sunday trying to find parts for a DC motor for a car turntable, you know, it's all sorts of things.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, there are times when I can, I mean, the things that we look for, okay, how far from where we are is the nearest Radio Shack? And you know, can we get in there the day before and get the cell phone number for the owner?
Thank God for Google Maps.
Absolutely. You know, it's so funny because I look at it now and I'm like, you know, I just got an iPhone 5 and I'm like, boy, do I wish I had had Siri when I was in staging. You know, Siri, where can I find a DC motor? and you know, it's interesting the things that it will find, including places to hide a body. The maps thing, the Apple Maps were a little, you know, okay. Well, it thought I was in Denmark for a while when I was in Northern Connecticut, but Google got that one right. Anyway, in your current role, I mean, you train people on parts for, you know, some of the best looking and very largest video walls I've ever seen. Are staging companies getting in there now? And is there a difference in the way you train them?
Well, with our technology that we're doing at Prism, it's not really set for staging. We tried to do that a little bit, and it really didn't work out well because ours is just, it's big, it's heavy, it's very delicate. And it's not well suited to that marketplace. You know, we're hoping to go there down the road. But you know, it went, you know, but we've had some guys in for training, and, you know, and again, ours fits into that kind of mindset because it's very just sort of, you got to do this, you got to do this, you got to do this. And then, you know, and it's funny because, like, when I look at, you know, in my particular case, being good at setting this stuff up and being able to teach people about it, it's, you know, I look at the various skill sets that I've brought to bear that have made me good at this. And, you know, it's, you know, for one part of the installation, I'm a vidiot, you know, shooting colors with a colorimeter and stuff like that. At one part, I'm a network technician, setting up the network of all the processors communicating with each other. You know, when it comes to assembling all of our frames, it's like back to the dark ages of multimedia, you know, plus 10 for, you know, lining this stuff up. And, you know, thank goodness for laser levels is all I'll say. And then all of a sudden when I'm aligning all of our individual tiles, because ours is kind of like video Lego, if you will, it actually takes me back to sort of multi-image with, you know, this very, very careful lining up and getting things perfectly aligned so you've got nice even seams. But it's all of these different skill sets that come together to do one thing. And that's, I think, you know, that's sort of, you know, the essence of that staging thing is it's, you know, like you know about a lot of different things because, you know, the most valuable person on that staging job is, you know, obviously the technical lead, whatever their name might be, you know, with the company they're working at or whatever. But it's, you know, it's like the old adage of, you know, you've got your fingers in everything but your hands on nothing to try and make sure that everything comes together.
Yeah, I used to say that, you know, if you were in charge of a project like that, you really shouldn't be carrying anything but a clipboard. Because when you do, especially as technical director on a show, when you do, you spend too much time with your head down in video, you look up and lighting is now way behind. So, you know, you really...
we were doing a show in Chicago one time at the Navy Pier. I don't know if you've ever seen the building, but it basically looked like a Zeppelin hangar. And we had trusses hanging, and the trusses were floating at about 4.5 feet or something like that, because we were, you know, they were putting all the lights on and everything else. And as usual at a job like that, I was walking around, not with a clipboard, but with my cell phone, making calls all over the place, you know, sourcing various things that we needed. And for some reason, I was wearing a baseball cap, and I'm not a baseball cap wearer. And when walking around a hall with trusses floating at 4.5 feet and your head down into your phone and a baseball cap on, not a good combination. The trusses were hanging from about 60 feet, and I smacked into it with my head, stumbled around for a few moments, fell to the ground, and I was rolling around, and a stagehand came up with his hands in his pockets and kind of looked at me and said, "Did you hit it very hard?" And he looks up, and he can see the entire truss swaying back and forth and just goes, "I guess you did," and walks away. And I don't know why I suddenly thought of that, but yeah. No. You've got your head in your phone, you've got your head in your clipboard, because you're keeping track of all the little details.
Right.
Unfortunately, on that job, I was also the Hughes techs, which meant an all-nighter to get those darn things lined up.
Yeah, I remember those all too well. And your adventures with them, because we were on a lot of shows together where the rest of us were knocking off for the night and you were just getting into a bucket lift.
Me and Carrie getting into a bucket.
Yep, absolutely. Anyway, you know, that's an interesting story because I had one a lot like it with a client who walked in the room, looked at a truss that was floating and said, "That's way too low."
So it is.
So there's the other thing that you really have to get used to, I think, as a stager is the ability to to take comments like that and smile and just go on with things and not laugh.
Well, that was one of the places where Frank was really good, because Frank Mullaney would always just, if anybody walked in before it was show ready, he would just keep saying to them, it's not show conditions. Walk away, come back later.
Well,
but then, managing clients too. Like I had a bunch of CDs I always kept in my bag of the favorite songs of various clients, so that when I knew they were showing up, their favorite music would be playing on the sound system, which would instantly put them in a better mood.
Those are the things that you think of. And, as my first boss, Terry Friesenberg, taught me, the number one rule of staging was act naturally and keep moving. And no matter what happens, that was supposed to happen. It's very Pee Wee Herman. I meant to do that. Yes, ma'am, it always makes that noise at this point in setup as you quickly run for the technical manual. Anyway, Chris, we are running out of time here.
No worries.
I want to thank you very much for taking time out from your exciting evening in Beijing to be with us. Give me a call when you get home, and we'll pick up on this subject again in the future.
All right. Thanks, Joel.
Thank you.
Take care, and thanks a lot.
Have a great one. Well, that's all we have time for today. But join us again next episode here on The Week on Rave Radio. And don't forget, there's lots more to listen to in our other podcasts on Rave Radio. Check them all out at www.ravepubs.com and on iTunes. And thanks once again to our sponsor, Mitsubishi, for helping us bring you this show. Check out some more great stuff at www.mitsubishielectric.com. And thanks for listening to Rave Radio. I'm Joel Rollins, wishing you a great week ahead.